Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Today is April the 1st, 2020. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. The COVID-19 pandemic is no joke. First and foremost, we hope all our listeners heed the official warnings and take all precautionary measures to remain safe and healthy. For updated information about the coronavirus disease, these are the following websites that you should visit. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is https://cdc.gov. World Health Organization is https://who.int. And finally, Coronavirus Real-Time Statistics, https://covid19stats.live. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the internet. Podcasts of the programs available on prn.fm, on the internet, and pcradioshow.org to listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. The number is 641-793-7091. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Windows 10 has a new network connectivity issue. Windows users who run recent and not-so-recent versions of Windows 10 may have noticed network connectivity issues recently. Microsoft acknowledged a new issue for all supported versions of Windows 10 on March the 26th. That comes in two different severity levels. The lighter issue changes the internet connectivity icon of the operating system to one that indicates limited or no internet connectivity, even if that is not the case. Some users may also notice that some applications may not be able to connect to the internet while the issue persists. Microsoft notes that both issues may be experienced on devices that uses a proxy connection or virtual private network connection, that's a VPN. Devices using a manual or auto-configured proxy, especially with a VPN, might show limited or no internet connection status in the network connectivity status indicator in the notification area. This might happen when connected or disconnected to a VPN or after changing state between the two. Devices with this issue might also have issues reaching the internet using applications that use WinHTTP or WinINET. Examples of apps that might be affected on devices in this state are as follows, but not limited to Microsoft Teams, Microsoft Office, Office 365, Outlook, Internet Explorer 11, and some versions of Microsoft Edge. Microsoft lists Windows 10 version 1709 and higher on the client side as affected, and Windows Server version 1709 and higher on the server side. Microsoft programs are especially affected by the issue, according to the report, as programs such as IE11, Microsoft Office, or Microsoft Teams may not be able to connect to the internet. The company is working on a resolution and plans to release an out-of-band patch in early April to resolve the issue. Users may resolve the issue temporarily by restarting the device, according to Microsoft. And if you didn't understand what was going on and you cannot get to the internet, just restart the device. What home devices can slow down your internet access? Internet connections are under increasing strain as millions of people self-isolate due to the coronavirus. To improve your internet speeds, follow the list of practical tips for improving the speed and reliability of your home network. Test your internet speeds regularly. I use fast.com, that's fast.com. Test both wire and wireless connections. The test will help home users to identify what might be slowing things down. Some electrical devices, such as dimmers, can cause interference and affect internet speeds. Halogen lamps, electrical dimmer switches, stereo or computer speakers, fairy lights, TVs and monitors, and AC power cords have all been known to affect routers. Keep your router as far away as possible from other electrical devices, as well as those which emit wireless signals, such as your cordless phones, baby monitors, and so on. Try to place your router on a table or shelf rather than on the floor and keep it switched on. Microwave ovens, heaters, cordless phones, and baby monitors are also good sources of interference. You can't banish them from your home just because you work from home now, but you can make sure the router is not right next to them. Your microwave could play a role in keeping your household online. Using your microwave can reduce Wi-Fi signals, so don't use a microwave when you're making video calls, or watching high-def videos, or doing something important online. Another tip is to make sure your router is optimally placed. Positioning your router away from phones and TVs can improve the connection. Keep it away from devices such as cordless phones, stereos, halogen lamps, TVs, and dimmer switches. In order to get the best possible connection, and put it on a table or shelf rather than on the floor. Recommendation is to disconnect your devices from your Wi-Fi network when you're not using them. Smartphones and tablets often use the internet in the background even when they're not in use, and disconnecting them would mean you get a stronger connection on other devices. Try scheduling your internet use so multiple users aren't making video calls at the same time, or download video in advance rather than streaming it. It may also be worth connecting your computer to your router using an Ethernet cable, which gives better internet speeds than Wi-Fi. You can check whether your internet is as fast as your provider says it is by running a speed test online and look into whether your provider has its own tips on maintaining a good connection. How do you tell you have the revised Raspberry Pi 4 board? When the Raspberry Pi 4 Model B was released last year, many users quickly found out that it had a USB-C issue that prevented the board from properly recognizing certain power adapters. At the time, Raspberry Pi said that a revision would probably come at some point in time, but stopped short of providing an exact date. Raspberry Pi has confirmed that the revised design has been sent to manufacturing and the new board should have reached end users by now. So how can you tell if that the Raspberry Pi 4 that you bought recently has the updated Rev 1.2 design? How would you know you purchased the latest revision board and not sold an older board out of the retailer's inventory? I'll have the following posted on our website, pcradioshow.org. If you're shopping for one and the store allows you to inspect it, you can look for the position of the WLCSP SD card voltage switch, which has been moved from behind the micro SD card slot to the top corner. Alternatively, look for this unidentified transistor thingy that seems to be new on the Rev 1.2 board. If the retailer assures you that it is the latest board, have him or her assure you in writing that it can be returned if it is not. With the unit up and running, CNX software, head to the command line and use the cat command, CAT space, /PROC/CPU info to retrieve the CPU info. If you've the new board, the revision section should read C03112. And the model would be listed as Raspberry Pi 4 Model B Rev 1.2. The release of Apple iOS 13.4 is causing serious iPhone problems. Apple iOS 13.4 has many new features, but unfortunately it is also full of problems, affecting the Apple iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, iPhone 11 Pro Max, iPhone upgrade, and iPhone update. Discovered by popular VPN service Proton, Apple iOS 13.4 contains a security vulnerability which prevents your data from being secured when using a VPN on your iPhone. Proton explains that iOS 13.4 fails to close existing unsecure connections when your VPN is started, and some are long-lasting and can remain open for minutes to hours outside the VPN tunnel. This is hugely significant for any iPhone owner who uses a VPN to protect their most sensitive data. And most worrisome, Proton explains that it originally discovered the bug in iOS 13.3.1 and told Apple, who acknowledged it, but has since failed to provide any subsequent fix, despite iOS 13.4 coming out almost 2 months later. Neither Proton VPN nor any other VPN service can provide a workaround for this issue because iOS does not permit a VPN app to kill existing network connections. Proton suggests starting a VPN and turning airplane mode on and off as a way to kill active connections outside the VPN, but this only works for Apple's always-on VPN since it requires device management to which no third-party VPNs have access. This iOS bug could seriously affect your work-from-home plans. If you are using the personal hotspot feature in iOS 13, this bug could be causing you no end of hassle and aggravation. Apple has acknowledged that a bug exists in iOS 13, personal hotspot feature that may cause users to not to be able to connect. The personal hotspot feature allows users to use their cellular connection to create a Wi-Fi hotspot that other devices can connect to. According to Mac Rumors, Apple has told authorized service providers to expect complaints from users being unable to connect using the feature and from users who experience data performance issues. The temporary fix currently offered by Apple is rather predictable for users to toggle the feature off and on. The unreliability of the personal hotspot feature is part of the reason why it may be preferable to carry a dedicated mobile hotspot such as Netgear Nighthawk M1 or M2 mobile routers. These are far more dependable and flexible than iOS built-in hotspot feature, and it means that you don't run down your iPhone battery as quickly. If you're relying on hotspotting for your work-from-home plan, it is recommended that you have a backup. Presenting IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell. His feature segment will be, What Will We Learn from Telecommuting?
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now is time for business talk. All right, this is where I give you tidbits and bits and pieces of information from my current and past experience. 30 years of being an IT professional, and we are starting into some very interesting, uncharted territory. This idea of millions upon millions upon millions of us all just working from home. Yeah, I know. Some of us are not. And my prayers go out for those of you who are experiencing a major disruption. In my case, I will tell you that this entire world of telecomputing, this entire world of communications is something that I'm familiar with. It's actually something I don't enjoy. I just have a certain way about me. I like to be around people. Yes, I am somewhat of an introvert, and I am somewhat of a nerd. Those go hand in hand frequently. But this entire crisis has really shaken up a lot of where we're going as a world, as businesses, as employers and employees, and, you know, this is going to change us quite a lot. What do I see on the forefront? And I want to prepare you now. When we finish with all of this, and, you know, there's another whole story for other people on, you know, talking heads on the radio and in television and whatnot to talk about how long we're going to be going through this. I am not an epidemiologist. I am not some kind of medical professional. If you want the medical professional, that's a different show, different time. Right now, I am a nerd, a computer nerd, and I'm going to tell you the business side of what are we going to go through. So whenever we get through this, we are in the middle of the largest experiment one could ever imagine in regards to having people work from home. We are, the company I work for, we are all working from home. There's nobody in the office. The company is paying right now for enough space for hundreds of people to sit. They've got all of this space, which can occupy a bunch of nerds, and nobody's there. They are paying for the electricity for the building. They're paying the space rent. They're paying insurance. They're paying a number of different things for that workspace. This is a recurring theme around the world. A lot of companies are all of a sudden realizing we have a ton of space. We don't have any conference rooms. Why are we paying for those really expensive conference room tables? Why? Doesn't matter anymore. Everybody's sitting via remote. We're all talking to each other. We're all having our Skype, WebEx, Link, Zoom, whatever calls with each other. Many of us are still productive. Many of us are highly productive. So why would we occupy all of that space? Some companies have been ahead of the curve on this. They have talked about, you know, this idea of everybody working via remote for a number of years. They've said, yes, there is a certain type of employee that you need for this. Not everybody is going to be very efficient at working from home. You know, there are many distractions when you're not in the office. At the same time, there are distractions when you are in the office. How often have you gone and you've gone off and you had to ask somebody one question and that led into 50 other questions, all of them non-productive, non-business, all around the water cooler? You only expected to spend 5 minutes, but instead you spent an hour. Well, you duplicate that across the entire company. That starts racking up some time. When we start changing the field, when we start changing this paradigm, people are now going to be measured based on productivity. People are going to be measured on what they do for the company, because we're going to have to find ways to say, hey, this person's particularly efficient. This person is not. That's going to affect us all. That may affect us, some of us, in particularly negative ways, because there are people who will run rings around us. There are people who will not run rings around us. There are people who we will find out are, yeah, they're great for morale, but they're really, yeah, not all that great with their technology or whatever it is that they're doing. I think this is going to affect us in a number of different ways. And I think that we all need to be prepared. I will tell you that as we move through this, hopefully each of us, you, myself, all of your coworkers, all of my coworkers, that we discover this new paradigm and we learn to work with it and become better people throughout all of this, better employees. And if we're better employees, that means, yes, the company's going to make more money because we're better employees, but also because, yeah, they won't have to spend a gazillion dollars on office space anymore. Those expensive conference room tables at $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, those aren't needed quite so much anymore. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. The internet is coping with all that extra traffic. From remote workers to kids playing games and college students taking online courses, in place of classroom courses, broadband and mobile networks are dealing with the additional demand for connectivity. The global coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic is forcing more employees to work from home every day, and with each of us connecting to our household router, the pressure on broadband networks to support unprecedented demand for connectivity has reached very high levels. Torsen daily check in on relatives via the internet, and it is easy to see what the network providers are facing. Ensuring reliable access to connectivity and for all users, including those who struggle to pay their bills, all the while supporting much busier online traffic than usual. In-home data usage in the United States has surged 18% from March 1 to March 17 compared to the same period a year ago. The usage has increased as schools close and people work from home. In-home data usage for connected TVs was up 27% in March from a year ago, with smart speakers up 30% and phones up 34%. While streaming gameplay requires 3 to 6 megabits per second, workers need only 1.5 megabits to join a meeting via teleconferencing. What's more, the surge in traffic from workers now confined to their homes is likely to happen during office hours, which are typically 10 times quieter than evening peaks, and can therefore accommodate a lot more demand. What has mostly happened so far is an increase in broadband usage during the day, so there are a lot more gigabytes going over the network, but they are doing so when the network wasn't busy, which makes it broadly manageable. Providers are able to deal with this trend. Although increasing capacity is nothing new for broadband providers, the speed at which they are required to do so in the face of a fast-spreading virus is a new challenge. Providers have never seen anything like this before. They know how to increase capacity because capacity has been growing 30 to 40% a year over the past 10 years. But growing 30 to 40% a month is much more challenging. It is difficult to predict how consumption trends will change in the next few weeks, and therefore how network providers can prepare for the future. A full assessment had been carried out and continuity plans put in place, while for now, any usage increase seen in the daytime, caused by more people working from home, for example, can be handled from existing network capacity. As the pandemic affects more industries and threatens jobs in all fields, however, there has been increasing focus on ensuring that connectivity is not only reliable, but that it is also accessible for all that needs it, a challenge that is likely to only grow in the near future. In a move to stop more vulnerable customers from being cut off from the internet, most providers have removed all caps to provide users with unlimited data at no extra cost for a month. Such efforts align with recent announcements from broadband providers in the United States, equally prompted by the potential difficulties that customers will face to make ends meet in a time when decent broadband is fast becoming a necessity. AT&T, for instance, said that it will be waiving data caps and not enforcing late payment fees, while Verizon, in addition to waiving overage charges, promised to not terminate service or require late fees. More than 550 U.S.-based companies have pledged allegiance to the Keep Americans Connected initiative launched this week by the Federal Communications Commission, that's the FCC, which asks broadband and telephone providers to ensure that Americans do not lose their broadband or telephone connectivity as a result of those exceptional circumstances. The internet service providers are looking at ways to target support for vulnerable supporters, and their number one priority at the moment is to ensure that customers can access online services and that performance of the network is maintained. If possible, they want people to carry on paying for their network broadband in a normal way and for telecom companies to keep paying their employees in a normal way. Then money continues to flow in a way that it should. Percent of employed people did some or all of their work at home before the COVID-19 medical crisis. Is working at home more or less efficient than working in the office? Does working at home threaten issues of data privacy? With a stay-at-home order, many companies will reevaluate how we work and how we communicate with each other after things return to some normalcy. So we're all working from home, at least for those who have work to be done at home. For some, that means peace and quiet. For others, it means trading the sanctity of the office for the distractions of the out-of-school kids and distressing media reports. What it also means is a new challenge of securing a suddenly remote workforce, many of whom were purely office-based before. Not only that, but the surge in cyber scams and malware, much of which is dressed in COVID disguises, has made that challenge even more acute. One such tool is the trusted VPN, virtual private networks, or tunnels from your computer or mobile devices to the cloud and physical servers, as well as the websites you access. Now the number of crunches at NordVPN, teams have collated some of this data, reporting that Europe seems to be working as much as 2 hours extra each day. The U.S. is going even further, putting in a full 3 hours of extra work. This has been calculated based on the use of business VPNs. One can assume that only the foolish would pursue non-work activities on their work VPNs. What else does that data say? We seem to be starting earlier. That lack of a commute, but finishing at the usual time. We're taking to desktops and laptops more than mobiles, and with VPN usage through the roof. It has never been more important to pick a product that is safe and secure. The irony with VPN is, and I've reported this before, is that many of these are actually a major security risk in themselves. Those risks were down to VPN products themselves, patchy encryption, dodgy servers, obscure developers based primarily in China. But now a team of security researchers has taken a look at websites of more than 100 VPN providers. It should come as a huge surprise that some of their favorites, VPNs, don't seem to respect their users' privacy at all. So what are the issues? First and foremost, the use of trackers to collect and share data. VPN Pro warns that despite many of these trackers are fairly benign and more a nuisance than a threat, but some are just plain bad, sharing personally identifiable or personal data with third parties. There is even more alarming issue with VPN developers using session replay scripts to record how users engage with websites. They found that 26 VPN websites use session replay scripts on their sites, with one even using three different sessions replay tools to record users. The recordings will play back what you clicked on, search for some even where your mouse has hovered, and these are actually video recordings of your activity. Sounds weird, doesn't it, for a privacy site? Heh, you're right. The advice is the same as for core VPN warnings issued before. If your company has issued one to staff, then one hopes that the IT department has done its research. If you're picking one for yourself, then look around. Check the various online reports. Look at a few, not just one or two, and under no circumstances, select a free VPN from an obscure developer. Those are dangerous, and it's simple as that. As VPN Pro puts it, VPN websites are using the same marketing tactics for which they often accuse the big names like Facebook does. In fact, 45 websites analyzed are using Facebook trackers. That's pretty much like talking out of both sides of your mouth, with one saying that Facebook is bad for your privacy, while at the same time stating that Facebook is good for your customers. Beyond VPNs, which ensure a secure link into your workplace and the protection of your data security and privacy, you should also be very careful as to what you link and click what you open and access. The net of all this is that working at home is more efficient. However, in the case of privacy, there are many issues that must be resolved before it's done. The following is an excerpt of what I did a few weeks ago about setting up your own home VPN hardware. That would get around the problem. If you don't trust these cloud VPN offerings, well, there is an alternative. Set up a Raspberry Pi VPN server. You could do this easily by doing a search on the following words. Set up a Raspberry Pi VPN server. To get the installation guide details of how to turn your Raspberry Pi into a VPN server, This is then done via hardware. Running your own VPN server is a great way to increase your mobile security and get access to your LAN from the internet. PyVPN turns your Raspberry Pi into a cheap, effective VPN server using a guided installation that does most of the hard work for you. You'll be able to bypass website filters at work or school and easily connect to devices on your home network like file servers or printers. And with just a few extra steps, you can also enable end-to-end encryption and run all of your mobile internet through a secure and anonymous tunnel. What is PyVPN? PyVPN is a lightweight open VPN server designed to run on a Raspberry Pi 2 or 3. It gives you access to your home network through a secure connection over the internet. By plugging a Raspberry Pi into your router, it acts somewhat like a bridge between mobile devices and your network. You can then use your PyVPN to access your files, music, and movies from anywhere, encrypt your mobile internet connection, print on your home printers from your laptop, bypass firewalls and website restrictions at work and abroad, and it hides your mobile IP address. Connect with your home cameras and smart devices. If you find yourself forwarding a lot of services through your router, a home VPN connection is a more secure alternative than a cloud VPN. Each port you forward is a tunnel that someone, somewhere could use to get into your network. PyVPN only opens up one port and it uses strong encryption to keep your LAN secure. Give it a try. It's a little project, doesn't cost that much. And let me know how it goes with the project. Presenting Marty Winston with All Hands on Tech. Well, with Marty Winston, it's spring cleaning time. He's now going to go through his man cave to determine what is trash and what is treasure.
I'm not your mom. And if I sound like her, I apologize. So, there won't be lectures about cleanliness. Also, this isn't church, so we won't talk about godliness or how much closer to meeting God you may find yourself if you skip the things that I'm not telling you about cleanliness. COVID-19. Sadly, COVID-19 is still a factor right now, and that puts a twist on what should otherwise be a normal spring cleaning segment. Even on an April Fool's Day, you won't hear anybody promise that cleanliness alone can keep you healthy. And by the way, speaking of April Fool's Day, sometimes you can fool them back. Are you getting a lot of robocalls? Back in the days when answering machines were brand new and involved one tape recorder to play back the outgoing message and a second tape recorder to record the incoming message. Well, back then, an old pal came up with a clever and devious way to only hear from people who knew him. His outgoing message tape was a recording of a busy signal. If you didn't know to wait 30 seconds for the beep, you would never reach him. That trick might work today. All right, by now, you're completely aware that the way you catch most respiratory infections is when its host virus gets expelled into the air. It rides through the air on the spray droplets of somebody coughing or sneezing who's got the virus. They've got the virus. It rides out on that, infects everybody else. Now, imagine that you're as small as those droplets. You ride on the blow of that sneeze or that cough, and your ride is almost over. You feel yourself falling. Where will you land? Will it be on the credit card reader at the checkout? On the arms of the chair in the waiting room? On the keypad at the ATM, on a doorknob, on elevator buttons. Yes, yes, yes to all of those and more. And just as a memory aid, see if you remember this nursery rhyme. Peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, peas porridge in the pot 9 days old. This isn't about peas porridge. There really is such a thing as peas porridge, by the way. And no pun intended, it's made with peas. Maybe it's just saying give peas a chance, but that's not the point. The point here, the whole reason for bringing it up, is 9 days old to remind you that the COVID-19 virus that transports to a surface on that spray from a sneeze or a cough, or at somebody's hands, that virus can still get you sick for 9 full days. Touch it 9 days later, you're in trouble. Contact contamination, just touching wherever that spray landed less than 10 days ago, up to 9 full days ago, puts you within arm's length, literally arm's length, of getting infected. The virus completes its route when your fingers touch any part of your body that's at or near an opening. Your eyes, your mouth, your nose, nearby, your cheeks. So, some good advice. If you're not being a full-time homebody, treat every surface as if it's radioactive. Don't touch it. And think of your fingers as 10 rattlesnakes ready to bite your face. That's the reason for all the hand washing. And that's the reason that so many places have been shut down, to cut the odds that somebody who's sick will be there, and to cut the odds that somebody who isn't sick can pick it up there. Staying home is safer for everyone. That's why today's top hit should be, don't get around much anymore. That's also why there's so much attention to wiping down surfaces with disinfectants. We'll get into your tech in a sec, but let's connect a few more dots first. You get a delivery. Somebody has sent you a letter or a catalog or a package. How many people has it been near in the past 9 days, and how many surfaces? But you don't think about that. You bring it inside and deal with it. Maybe read it. Maybe just throw it away. And then what? Well, you reach for the TV remote or your phone or your tablet or your notebook or your computer keyboard mouse. Oops, getting a little close to reality there. So how do you clean those? You may think that you don't know squat about quat, but you really do. Medical professionals know the term quat, and you've had quat wipes in your hands many times. Quat is a nickname for quaternary ammonium chloride, the active disinfecting ingredient in things like Clorox wipes, Lysol wipes, and most other consumer sanitizing wipes. It's also what they use in doctors' offices and hospitals. Quat wipes. If you can get them, this is a time to use them all the time on remotes and doorknobs and countertops and faucets and so on. If you can't find them, can you find a jug of Clorox or some other brand of chlorine bleach? You only need a 10% solution of chlorine bleach in water. For example, 1 cup of bleach and 9 cups of water. 10% is bleach, 90% is water. If you're making that much and you want to keep it in a plastic water bottle, for goodness sake, make sure you put it where kids can't reach it and use a marker to label it as a poison. When you use it, put a little in a shallow bowl and use paper towels or clean rags to wipe things down. In your workplace, that includes your mouse, the arms of your chair, careful on fabric arms if you use the diluted bleach instead of quat wipes, your desktop, drawer pulls, doorknobs, everything anybody might touch, and anywhere you might put something down. There's another technology that can also sanitize, but be careful with this one. Well, be careful because there are both legitimate and scam products that claim to use it. It's a specific higher energy, shorter wave band in the ultraviolet spectrum called UVC. Some legitimate UVC products, well, some of them start at $50 or so, but be careful. No, tougher than that. Be wary. UVC can only be effective when the intensity is high enough and the length of exposure is long enough to kill whatever microorganisms are there. Be suspicious of any product that runs on USB power or small batteries, and of any product that claims to do it with ultraviolet LEDs instead of tubes. Those tubes look a little like small fluorescent tubes and a little like neon sign tubes. Tubes are tubular. LEDs are not. They're little dots. If you're shopping online, pay attention to the buyer ratings. Pay attention to the reviews. If you get a chance, check a second seller and see what the ratings and reviews say there. There's another reason to be careful. UVC is not friendly to humans. Protect your eyes. Cover your skin. Don't let others into the room. UVC is an excellent way to sanitize keyboards, smartphones, tablets, notebooks, and so on. All of this, it just isn't the way spring cleaning segments used to go. Can you remember what the standard recommendations used to be? There was canned air or compressed air to blow the dust out, or vacuums to clear the dust. We'll skip those this year. That dust could harbor live virus passed on by contact, and if you blow it into the air, you give it a free ride into what you next inhale. The same is true for a vacuum, because the air that's sucked in gets sucked through the dirt collection bag and then goes out again. And the pores, the little holes in those dirt bags that the air goes through, are gigantic compared to the size of a virus. So, no blowing and no sucking. If you want to use a trapping wipe like a Swiffer, that's better. But you can also wet mop with a diluted bleach solution, that 10% solution, and that's more of a catch-and-kill operation. Ionic or electrostatic air cleaners and some HEPA filter-based air purifiers can do a lot to reduce the population of live microorganisms in indoor air. You might want to check those out, too. So far, these are measures that help build separation between where you live and where the virus can live. Essentially, it's a moat. But there's a whole other angle to consider. Why do some people seem to be able to dodge the bullet, while others are like sickness magnets? Well, in a word, there's a word for it. Susceptibility. When your body is healthy, its natural defenses can go a long way toward coping with any known or unknown infection. But it's dangerous to use the word healthy because so many of us cheat or fib a little about what healthy really is, and that's not helpful. So let's consider the opposite. What can make you more vulnerable, more susceptible? Here's a list. Not enough sleep. Too much stress. Smoking or secondhand smoke. Air pollution or other irritants in the air. Air that's too dry. A pre-existing respiratory issue like an allergy or a cold or a flu or bronchitis or pneumonia. Something like that that's already in progress, not to mention the more serious breathing respiratory ailments. And, for that matter, any other diseases or issues that are already creating work for your immune system. There's no guarantee that starting healthy is enough to keep you healthy. But it's a sure thing that starting unhealthy is a head start to getting sick. So, don't take your phone to the bathroom. Do clean your earbuds. Do take your temperature every day. Do find situation-smart ways to cope with cleaning. And do get yourself and your house healthier so you both can stay that way. Next time, you don't have to be nerdy to be interested, but next time you can hear the story of a production PC that failed in an almost unrecoverable way. The data was intact, if not immediately accessible, but the motherboard just didn't want to live anymore. So, just to keep the remedy from being too simple, the replacement had to be ordered. It wasn't on hand locally, and when it came, it got built into a new case with a new power supply and a few new tricks. Your PC may not be much like this one, but that's part of the point. Be here next time for a segment we'll call Retrofitting Frankenstein. You can bring friends, but please, no torches.
Thank you, Marty. Hey, Marty, how do you get that 10 pound of trash into that 5 pound bag? Public service announcements. We hope all of you are doing well during this time of great uncertainty. The following directives were issued by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that's CMS, and the Social Security Administration, that's SSA. Medicare is a federal program and is run by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, an agency of the federal government, and CMS has set up a webpage with information for Medicare beneficiaries related to the coronavirus. Medicare covers related needs. Medicare covers the lab tests for COVID-19. You pay no out-of-pocket costs. Medicare covers all medically necessary hospitalizations. This includes if you're diagnosed with COVID-19 and might otherwise have been discharged from the hospital after an inpatient stay, but instead you need to stay in the hospital under quarantine. At this time, there's no vaccine for COVID-19. However, if one becomes available, it will be covered by all Medicare prescription drug plans, Part D. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, you have access to these same benefits. Medicare allows these plans to waive cost sharing for COVID-19 lab tests. Many plans offer additional telehealth benefits beyond the ones described. Check with your plan about your coverage and cost. From the Social Security Administration, all local Social Security offices are closed to the public for in-person service. This decision protects the population they serve, older Americans and people with underlying medical conditions, and their employees during the coronavirus pandemic. However, they are still able to provide critical services. Secure and convenient online services remain available at socialsecurity.gov, and local offices will also continue to provide critical services over the phone. If you need help from Social Security, use the secure and convenient online services available at socialsecurity.gov/online services. That's all one word, online services. There is a wealth of information to answer most of your Social Security questions online without having to speak with a Social Security representative in person or by phone. You can view online frequently asked questions at socialsecurity.gov/ask. If you cannot conduct your Social Security business online, check their online field office locator for specific information about how to directly contact your local office. Your local office still will be able to provide critical services to help you apply for benefits and answer your questions and provide other services over the phone. Your health and well-being remains top priority. Does Social Security know that you have heard this many times, but be sure to follow these important steps. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, especially before eating. Practice social distancing by avoiding contact with others within 6 feet. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. The virus remains on paper surfaces for hours and plastic for days. Stay at home and avoid others if you are sick. And finally, clean and disinfect frequently touch objects like phones, keys, and surface. Con Edison announced that it has stopped all meter readings and installation of smart readers due to the concerns of the growing coronavirus pandemic. Con Edison also issued a scam alert. Beware of anyone demanding payments right now, that they are not shutting off anyone's power, and beware of scams. Criminals are trying to take advantage of the coronavirus outbreak, and there are 5 things they want you to know. Beware of anyone visiting, emailing, or calling about outstanding bills or disconnecting service. You are not going to lose your power even if you can't pay your bill now. If anyone asks you for money for new meters because of the coronavirus, that's bogus. They don't charge for meters, and they put smart meter installation on hold. If someone comes to your door, verify they are who they say they are. Con Ed only enters your home or business for emergencies, safety reasons, and upon your request for critical issues, including turning on service. If someone claims to be from Con Edison, call 1-800-75-CONED. I'll repeat that, 1-800-75-CON-ED. That's 1-800-752-6633, and check the employee's name and ID number. If you are making a payment, do it safely. They'll never accept payment by cash apps such as Venmo or Bitcoin. They only accept online payments through coned.com and coned.com/guest payment. And finally, suspicious about an email from Con Edison? Don't click on any links that you're unsure about. Just released, federal coronavirus guidelines such as social distancing will be extended across the United States until at least the 30th of April. As such, all Computer Club meetings in the tri-state region have been canceled. Some final thoughts. These are trying times for all, and it has affected all individuals in a personal way. It is incredibly important that we all do our part during this time. This can mean working from home, avoiding face-to-face meetings, or visits with others and doing them virtually, or even canceling plans entirely. Also, if you have recently traveled, placing yourself under self-quarantine for 2 weeks is good practice. Don't go out into public spaces. The critical thing to know is that it is possible to carry the virus without showing symptoms. Now is not the time to be wandering out. While at home, and if you're looking for something to do, now is a great time to back up your systems. For those who are doing gig work, maintain a dialogue with your clients and work with them as best as you can. Review your finances. Events and social distancing requirements are resulting in a lot of canceled gigs, meaning a loss of income for many of you. If you need to, consult with banks or creditors. Many are offering assistance during this time period. Make sure you aren't cutting corners on basic living essentials. You need to stay safe and healthy. Also, now isn't quite the best time to make large purchases. If you haven't done it yet, getting your taxes prepared isn't the worst idea. Don't get overwhelmed. Quarantines, isolations, curfews can damage our mental health. Stay calm and make sure to talk to your friends and family during this time. If you're having a hard time, it is likely others around you are in the same boat. Having some friendly conversations and checking in with everyone is a good idea. Also, keep yourself busy if you're stuck at home. Do take a moment to reflect. Everyone probably has some extra time on their hands right now. You don't need to fill it out with endless tasks. Taking a second to breathe and relax can do wonders. All these current rules and changes can be scary. So it is very important to keep in mind that things will get better and people are around to help. Try to follow all the guidelines and rules as best as you possibly can. Every little bit helps. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm, on the Internet, and pcradioshow.org. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, as we're all shut in, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of my colleague Joe King and Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.